and fun experience. They're also requiring their guests to dress up less frequently. In 2008, 20% of weddings were black tie. Last year, only 16%. The number of those describing their weddings as casual jumped to 18% from 12% over that same period. The most expensive weddings took place in New York City. Peter Schachnow, CNBC Radio.
Steve Jurich here. Capped or uncapped? Hypothetical illustration or guaranteed level? Some annuity salespeople might have you believe that you're forced to choose between an annuity with a capped index strategy or an uncapped one. That's false. When you choose the right annuity, you have your choice of either or in the same annuity. That's why I compare up to 2,700 annuities to find you the best combination of income, accumulation potential, death benefit, ratings, and rider choices. I'll guide you personally and help you finally figure out the annuity puzzle. So don't leave your retirement in jeopardy. Let's get together soon.
Money Radio listeners are making the move to IQ Wealth. Find out why. Learn how to build your retirement with verified research, comprehensive comparison, and a fiduciary duty. Call 480-902-3333. 480-902-3333. Investment advisory services by IQ Wealth Advisory LLC, a registered investment advisor. Guarantees rely on the financial strength of the insurer, so compare with Steve and visit IQWealth.com.
It's an extremely valuable resource. It's found in offices, buildings, and schools. It's a resource that speaks volume, yet it never makes a sound. Everyone recognizes it. Everyone uses it. Interestingly enough, it's rarely discussed. Croy Sign Systems, designers and manufacturers of architectural and ADA signs since 1981. Let Croy be your resource for identification, direction, and information. Give Croy Signs a call at 480-619-6070 or online at kroysigns.com.
Hi, I'm Rick Kidder, President and CEO of the Scottsdale Area Chamber of Commerce, and I would like you to tune in to Chamber Chat. It'll be on Friday mornings at 9 a.m., right here on Money Radio 1510 AM, 99.3 FM. We're excited to have with us political leaders, business leaders, all of the people who are responsible for building a vibrant and prosperous economy in this incredible city that is Scottsdale. So join me, Rick Kidder, on Friday mornings at 9 a.m. right here on Money Radio.
This show is brought to you by Discount Tire. Your low-price journey starts at Discount Tire.
The information and opinions expressed in this broadcast are intended to address specific questions asked or situations described on this program and are not designed to constitute advice or recommendations as to any disease, ailment, or physical condition. You should not act or rely upon any information contained in this broadcast without seeking the advice of your personal physician. If you have any questions about the information or opinions expressed during this broadcast, please contact your doctor.
Good afternoon, Arizona. It's time for Doctor Talk with Dr. Belinda Barclay-White, a board-certified radiologist who specializes in breast imaging and breast-related issues, and Dr. Carrie Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. This show is about your health care, your well-being, and your life. Get the latest information and answers to your questions from nationally recognized physicians and healthcare experts. To join the conversation, visit our Facebook.com/Dr. Talk and use the hashtag Dr. Talk. That's Facebook.com/Dr. Talk. It's time for Dr. Talk with hosts Dr. Barclay White and Dr. Bordinko.
Welcome to another Saturday edition of Dr. Talk. As always, we appreciate you taking the time out of your busy weekend to join us for an hour and listen to some great medical advice from some of the leading experts around the country. And we have a great expert with us today that's going to talk about female urology. But before all the men turn the radio off at this point, I want to remind them some of the things we're going to talk about do affect them. And if it doesn't affect them, it probably affects a loved one around them. So stay tuned, because this is actually a really important topic, and we're going to talk about how many people it affects. So I want to welcome my co-host here, Dr. Belinda Barclay-White. And Belinda, this is a big topic in female radiology. I know you hear about this all the time from your patients.
Yes, absolutely. I don't actually do any of the diagnostic studies relating to it, but I used to, and I'm sure they've evolved since I left that area of expertise in radiology. But today we're going to talk about basically urinary incontinence or bladder leakage, right? And bladder leakage is loss of bladder control or involuntary loss of urine. In fact, it's very likely that you or someone else that you know, particularly elderly mothers, sisters, or even best friends, are quietly coping with this potentially embarrassing problem, right?
And there are lots of ads on the television about this. You know, they show the women running through the fields of daffodils, you know, like it's some great phase in life. And, you know, Dr. Rodriguez, who's joining us today from USC Keck School of Medicine, is really going to talk to our listeners and explain that, you know, this is not a lost cause. And even though they make it seem like a wonderful experience for our ladies on the commercials, you know, most women who have gone through this actually struggle with this silently because they don't know who to talk to. They don't know who to turn to. They don't know how to ask the right questions. So today's show is really important in empowering women to understand, no, it's not normal, and no, it's not acceptable. So we're going to give them some great options in the treatment of urinary leakage or bladder leakage and urinary incontinence. But before we jump into Dr. Rodriguez, you know, let's kind of touch base on why this occurs. You know, what causes stress urinary incontinence?
So as we get older, a sudden increase in abdominal pressure will sort of force bodily contents out, right? So hopefully it's just urinary incontinence. But anything that increases intra-abdominal pressure, such as coughing, sneezing, even laughing, or lifting something heavy or not so heavy, can cause an accidental loss of urine. This can be due to a single factor or many different things. So some of the things that predispose to it, Carrie?
Well, we have age is mostly this is a process that we start thinking about as women get postmenopausal, which we talk a lot about menopause on this show, but that does seem to affect this particularly. And I know Dr. Rodriguez is going to share her thoughts on that. But also pregnancies, vaginal deliveries, how many pregnancies you've had, obesity, which is a big factor in the U.S. Right now, of course, as well, because so many Americans are obese or even morbidly obese, and that definitely factors into it. Smoking history, that's probably going to be one that most our listeners are going, I don't know how that correlates. But, you know, we've drawn a lot of parallels between smoking and a lot of these chronic diseases that we've talked about over the last couple months. And then diet and family history. So those are some of the things that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily know would be contributing, but we're going to tease out some of that information from our expert today. And then some great stats on stress urinary incontinence.
So one in three women will experience bladder leakage during their lifetime. And in a clinical study of 131 women with urinary incontinence, more than 40% reported that it affected their work and other activities, such as jogging and moving about generally. And less than 50% of those women with urinary incontinence have ever discussed their symptoms with a healthcare provider. I think in the old days, the obvious person to discuss this with would probably be your gynecologist, but we're going in to see our gynecologist now as we get older less and less with the new changes, right? So
right.
We don't even have the opportunity to discuss it necessarily with a gynecologist. So
and then
who do you discuss it with?
Yeah, I think that's always the problem for everyone is who's the right person to go to. And that's what we definitely want to shed some light on today. And then, you know, no show on urinary incontinence would be complete if we did not touch on the infamous bladder sling. And I know Dr. Rodriguez has a lot of experience here and a lot of commentary. But the commercials from the law groups and the lawsuits that have surrounded bladder slings, I don't think anyone's been able to be under a rock long enough not to know about those. So we're absolutely going to touch base on that. But without much further ado, I want to bring Dr. Larissa Rodriguez of the USC Keck School of Medicine in. Thank you, Dr. Rodriguez, for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I want to tell our listeners a little bit about why we tried to get you into the show, because you are definitely one of the leaders in the country on understanding female urinary problems and complaints. And I don't want people to think that that's all you deal with is just urinary incontinence. Your bio goes far beyond that, but it's certainly one of your areas of expertise. And I just want to introduce them real quick to your background. So Dr. Rodriguez is a professor of urology and obstetrics and gynecology, like I said, at USC Keck School of Medicine in University of Southern California. She's also vice chair of academics and director of the Division of Pelvic Medicine and Reconstructive Surgery, which is why we have her on the show today. She did her Bachelor's of Science degree in mathematics at the famous MIT and completed her medical training and urology residency at Stanford. Then she went on to work as a fellow in female urology at UCLA, and then USC, I guess, kind of stole you away. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay, great. Well, we are really looking forward to having you kind of enlighten our listeners today and help them understand this almost epidemic problem because it affects so many women in the United States. So let's get into the meat of things and talk about our first question.
So what are the most common complaints that women come to you with? Or how do they come to you? Are they referred to you directly, or do they come from their primary care physicians?
You know, they come from different areas. Some of them are referred directly to me from their primary care physicians because they have incontinence, so they have symptoms that are affecting their quality of life, and they want to seek solution for their problems. Some of them actually find me on their own in the internet, and they come see me. Realizing that there are things that can be done for their symptoms of incontinence.
How common is this complaint? I mean, it might be hard for you as a specialist to understand the women that aren't coming to you, but what are some of the statistics that you know, let's say for women over the age of 50, how common is it that they would need to search out an expert like yourself?
Well, it is about 30% of women that will be suffering from this condition, and it definitely increases in incidence as they advance in age. The issue really is not so much how common it is, but how few women are actually being treated. You know, a lot of women don't talk about it. They think they're the only person that is being affected by this condition. It's not something that friends or family members share with others, so they even daughters not know that their mothers might be suffering from this condition. And due to our medical climate, you know, there are a lot of other diseases that the primary care doctors have to manage at the time of a visit, high blood pressure, diabetes, that many a time this question is not asked from the physician to the patient or even brought up.
Yeah, it wouldn't be one of my standard screening questions when they're in, like you said, coming in with the laundry list for their diabetes, hypertension, cholesterol, and recent heart attack. I'm not going to get down the list far enough to ask them about urinary incontinence. So why do you think it's a stigma? Why do you think people just don't talk more openly about it?
I think there are a couple of reasons. I think the main reason is that a lot of people don't realize how common it is, you know, how many people actually suffer from this condition. So they think they're alone, that they're the only person who might be suffering from this. I think this whole idea of wearing pads and sometimes even diapers to collect urine kind of infantilize people, and they feel embarrassed by that itself. A lot of patients think this is a normal part of aging, and this is just what happens as you get older, and that they shouldn't complain about it because they're not aware that this is not a normal part of aging. And lastly, it's not a terminal illness. So it's not the same as having cancer, having a terminal illness. This is really considered a quality of life issue. So a lot of patients don't complain about it.
So you're listening to Dr. Talk on Money Radio 1510 AM and 99.3 FM, and we're talking about bladder leakage. So please join us, join our conversation by visiting us on Facebook, facebook.com/Dr. Talk, or jump onto our blog at drtalkblog.com. We'll be right back after the break. Do you dread having your annual screening mammogram? For a totally different experience, give Arizona BreastNet a call. Our all-female staff provides you with years of expertise and immediate results in a clean, state-of-the-art, spa-like facility that respects your mind, your body, and your time. If, on the other hand, you have a new breast lump or breast-related finding, call Arizona BreastNet today for an immediate appointment and consultation with a doctor who will give you your results at the time of your visit. At Arizona BreastNet, you will never have to wonder, worry, or wait. Get your results today and call 480-314-7600. That's 480-314-7600. For an immediate appointment, or you can visit us online at breastnet.net for more information.
When you're driving down the road, the last thing you want to think about is tires. Trust Discount Tire to get you up to speed with the right tire for your vehicle. We carry the world's best brands of tires, all at everyday low prices. At Discount Tire, we're not just about tires, we're about people. We'll get you the right tire for your vehicle to help keep you safe on the road. Stop by any Discount Tire store for a free air pressure and tire safety check. Your low price journey starts here. Discount Tire. Your healthcare, your well-being, and your life. Now back to Dr. Talk with Dr. Barclay White, a board-certified radiologist, and Dr. Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. To join the conversation, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/Dr. Talk and use the hashtag Dr. Talk. That's facebook.com/Dr. Talk. Now, here's your hosts, Dr. Bordinko and Dr. Barclay White.
So welcome back to our show this Saturday. We're talking about urinary incontinence or bladder leakage. We have with us on the telephone Larissa Rodriguez, who specializes in female bladder issues, basically, particularly interested in incontinence. So before the break, we were talking about what are the most common complaints that women experience as they enter latter decades of life, and why is it often that they don't talk to their doctors about it? They just assume it's a normal part of aging, and they don't really seek any medical attention. You were saying that it's sort of embarrassing, and people do feel that they're the only one experiencing it, and we don't talk about it, unlike things like breast cancer, which we can't stop talking about, really. We don't talk about those sorts of things, but there is help out there. And even though it is part of aging, it can certainly be controlled. And these women who may be withdrawing socially because of this problem can actually get back to a more normal life with family and friends. So, Larissa, can you start by helping us or helping our listeners understand what the different types of urinary incontinence are, how that may affect us, and is it important to differentiate those different types of urinary incontinence?
Sure. There are three types of urinary incontinence. There is incontinence because the bladder has, you can think of the bladder being like a muscle, and it can have a spasm. And when the bladder has a spasm, you can expel urine. It's an involuntary spasm. And it's what you see on commercials called overactive bladder. The symptom the patient would experience or what they would describe is that they don't quite make it to the bathroom, that they have an urge to go that happens suddenly without much notice or much time, and that if they don't run or they won't make it to the bathroom, they would actually empty the whole bladder. And it's usually a very large volume of urine, which makes it very problematic and it's very unpredictable.
So that occurs when the bladder is more full. Is that
not
fair
necessarily
to say?
You know, these spasms can happen with a full bladder. They can happen with a not so full bladder. But the leakage is usually of the content of the bladder. The amount of it is usually the whole content of the bladder.
So a lot of social embarrassment around this because, like you said, it's not predictable. It's spontaneous, and it can be large volume. So you could be
correct,
sitting in a restaurant having lunch and all of a sudden get the spasm. So that's overactive bladder. What's the other type of stress or incontinence?
And the leakage we call urgent incontinence because the patients have a sense of urgency. They have to go. They have to go now. The other type is stress urinary incontinence that you were mentioning earlier in the show. And stress incontinence is really a problem with the urethra, which is the tube through which we urinate that goes from the bladder to the outside world, not closing very well. And that's the type of leakage that happens when there's increases in abdominal pressure, coughing, sneezing, exercise, lifting your children, lifting your grandchildren, gardening, sudden changes in position. it tends to be a little bit more predictable because you know you're going to do the activity. You can anticipate a little bit that you might leak, and some people just kind of tighten their muscles so they don't leak. And it usually tends to be at the time of the activity. So once the activity ends, the leakage ends. And
okay.
That's what we call stress incontinence.
And then there's also a form that's a mixed version of both of those?
There is a form that is probably the most common, that is a version of both, where patients will have sometimes stress incontinence. They leak when they laugh or when they cough, but they also leak. They also have desires to urinate and urgency that wakes them up in the middle of the night, or when they put the key on the door, or some triggers that sends this urgency. And a lot of patients suffer from both. And there's a rare type of incontinence where we call overflow incontinence, where patients leak because the bladder is really not emptying. It's so full. The bladder never really explodes. So if it's so full and the patient is not emptying, they might leak, and it's called overflow incontinence. It's extremely rare in women, more common in men.
Is that something? Well, yeah, because in men they get an enlarged prostate, so they
right,
don't clear
correct.
It. Is that more common in women who are diabetics?
It can be. It's more common in women who are diabetic. Women who have neurologic disease can have this. You have a urethral stricture and an anatomic obstruction of the urethra or blockage, you could have this. As we get older, the very elderly, emptying is more inefficient. So it is not unusual for patients in their 80s or older that might have a bladder that doesn't empty completely and also have overactive bladder and urgency on top of that.
So there's a lot of things that they need to sort out, and that obviously requires the work of a specialist for them to be talking to. And I guess, so my next question is, we now have drugs that are over-the-counter for this, and you see the commercials on TV for overactive bladder called OAB is what a lot of people will see in the print ads. And they can just go pick up these pills right off the shelf at a pharmacy. But that sounds like that could really be a dangerous habit, because you've just described so many different variations, and then that would not be very effective.
That is correct. You know, these medicines can be effective, and I think for some patients, it's okay for them to take it. There's some very basic screening that should be done to try to differentiate this type of incontinence. It should be ensured that the patient doesn't have urinary tract infections or any issues in the urine that will prompt us to think of a bladder cancer or something more concerning, which, again, would be an extreme minority of patients. And to make sure the patient empties. If the patient's urine is clear and they empty, it's probably safe for them to try these medications. Some of them used to be by prescription only, and now they're available over the counter. And they can be taken. They can have some side effects. These anticholinergic medications can have side effects in up to 30% of patients who take it. So my concern sometimes is that more than being a risk to the patient, is that the patients might have a side effect and decide, oh, this is not worth it, so I'm not going to seek treatment, and really forego all the other treatment strategies available to them.
So when a patient comes into you, what tests might you have to do to determine what sort of incontinence they have and rule out some of these maybe rarer things before you go ahead with treatment? Do you do that with everybody, or is it more of a physical examination and a history taking that allows you to make the diagnosis, or do they have to undergo diagnostic tests to find out what's happening?
Not everybody has to have an invasive diagnostic test, but all patients should have a screening urinalysis, just a urine sample, and most patients have that at the time of the physical exam or when they see their gynecologist, just to make sure they don't have any blood in the urine, that they don't have any protein in the urine, that they're not spilling sugar, that they might be a diabetic that is undiagnosed. And they should have, all my patients have a residual, so I pulse void residual. I do a quick ultrasound and make sure that the bladder is emptying to rule out that rare population that might have this overflow incontinence.
So we're gonna cut you off here, Dr. Rodriguez, as we go out to another break. But we want to hold that thought because we're going to be coming right back. You're listening to Dr. Talk on Money Radio, 1510 AM, 99.3 FM. We're talking about bladder leakage with Dr. Larissa Rodriguez of USC Keck School of Medicine. And don't forget to join the conversation on Facebook.com/Dr. Talk, hashtag Dr. Talk, or drtalk.com.
Doctor, can't you? pause for a look at the world's news. Then we're back with Money Talk. We're Money Radio 1510 and 99.3 FM.
While the machete-wielding man shot by a sheriff's lieutenant at the New Orleans airport remains in critical condition, Jefferson Parish Sheriff Newell Norman says the attacker also had homemade bombs in a bag.
What the bag revealed was six half-pint mason jars with cloth wicks into a liquid that we now know to be gasoline, which you would commonly refer to as a Molotov cocktail.
There was more in his car. The attack took place last night. The deadline just over a week away, and Secretary of State John Kerry is citing progress in talks aimed at halting Iran's nuclear program. However, Kerry also said today that the clock is ticking.
It is time to make hard decisions. We want the right deal that would make the world, including the United States and our closest allies and partners, safer and more secure. And that is our test.
I'm Molly Page.
Honda made Osimo, the world's most advanced humanoid robot.
Hello.
And the Honda Dream Garage sales event, where you can get a great deal on a Honda Pilot, the most durable, longest-lasting SUV in its class, with room for up to eight humanoids.
Are we there yet?
During the Dream Garage sales event, get 0.9% APR financing for well-qualified buyers on a 2015 Pilot. Now, at your Honda dealer.
Durability based on longevity. Longevity based on IHS Automotive, Polk U.S. Vehicles, and Operation Registration Statistics 2003 to 2013. See your local dealer for financing details.
Hi, here's your delivery from Staples.com.
Thanks, Staples guy. Ugh, do you have stuff to clean this disaster of a break room?
Sure, Staples has wipes, paper towels, sprays, sponges, all at a low price.
How about these floors?
Disinfectant cleaners, mops, bucket with side press ringers, and yellow wet floor signs.
Anyone know how long it takes to reheat cod?
We also have air fresheners.
I'll take a case of those.
Make on budget happen, make cleaning up happen. Staples, make more happen. Now at Staples, get Scott 12-pack paper towels for just $7.99.
Offer valid on Q300469 in store and online is $3.28 while supplies last. See store staples.com for details.
This show is brought to you by Discount Tire. We carry the best selection of tires and wheels at everyday low prices. Your health care, your well-being, and your life. Now back to Dr. Talk with Dr. Barclay White, a board-certified radiologist, and Dr. Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. To join the conversation, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/Dr. Talk and use the hashtag Dr. Talk. That's facebook.com/Dr. Talk. Now, here's your hosts, Dr. Bordinko and Dr. Barclay White.
Welcome back to Dr. Talk. We're here in the studio on Saturday talking to Dr. Larissa Rodriguez of the USC Keck School of Medicine, who is associate chair of their Department of Female Urology and Pelvic Reconstruction, talking to us about what women's options are today if they're experiencing one of the symptoms of bladder leakage or urinary incontinence. And when we went to the break, Dr. Rodriguez, you were starting to tell us about the workup for a female. So what's that diagnostic approach? And we've kind of alluded through most of the show today that they probably don't have a lot of time to know what the problem is. They're rushed through their primary care's office. Maybe they get to a specialist like you. Hopefully they've looked you up on the web. And they come in and maybe they have a urinary screen, which would be a urinalysis as we refer to it in medicine, which just says you don't have an infection. You might have blood, don't have blood. But then they sit in your chair and they ask you, Doc, what's wrong with me? So what does that workup look like?
So the majority of it is actually history to try to differentiate if the symptoms are mostly of urgency incontinence or stress incontinence. But I need to make sure that the patient is emptying their bladder before we institute any treatment. So an ultrasound is done in the office after voiding on every patient to make sure they're emptying their bladder completely. A physical exam involving a pelvic exam to where sensations and innervation of the of the vaginal region and the bladder region is tested to make sure that this is not a neurologic type of picture, where we check for prolapse, where the organs, like the bladder, when people say my bladder has fallen down, so we're looking for those type of abnormalities that can be associated with urinary symptoms. And when we have the patients cough and strain and see if we can duplicate stress urinary incontinence on exam. if we do those things and the exam is normal, or we are, or it's not clear if the patient is suffering from urgency or stress incontinence, or in situations when the patients have other complicating factors like diabetes, neurologic disease, a stroke, multiple sclerosis, recurring infections, blood in the urine, then we will do a more thorough evaluation. It usually consists of looking inside the bladder, it's called a cystoscopy, and on occasion doing a study called a urodynamics, which is a functional study where we try to pretty much replicate in the clinic the symptoms of the patient while we're studying the bladder and seeing they have those spasms, those bladder contractility that are involuntary. We can evaluate the resistance of the urethra. We can evaluate how patients void, and then come up with a definite diagnosis.
And is that done with x-ray fluoroscopy?
Yes.
Okay.
Not always, but on occasion, yes. I do most of those studies with fluoroscopy.
Okay.
Is that something, you know, for our listeners that are out there, is that a painful procedure? I mean, I know as doctors, we sometimes just throw these out and say, okay, you're going to undergo this. But how uncomfortable are those procedures, that cystoscopy, which is that camera that looks inside the bladder, or the urodynamics, which is an invasive procedure? You're sticking probes in places people don't commonly go. So how does the listener going to know what they should experience?
So as I said, the majority of patients don't need those studies. But if you do, I usually tell my patients a cystoscopy feels like having a catheter placed in the bladder. Many women have had catheters placed in the bladder for other surgical procedures and sometimes for childbirth, so they might remember what that felt like. It's not pleasant, but it's not painful. And a cystoscopy takes 5 minutes. It's very quick. And we do put some numbing medication in the urethra. A urodynamics is a little bit longer of a procedure because we go through a whole one or two voiding cycles. So we fill the bladder, we let the patient urinate, and we might repeat it again. So it takes longer. The catheter is like the size of a spaghetti, but also goes inside the bladder. It has a little pressure transducer that's connected to a computer so we can measure all the events that are happening in the bladder. But the catheter itself is very small. It is involved. It's by no means something that the patient will want to come back to have it done again. They don't need to. But it's not painful per se.
Okay. And that information then tells you if medications will play a part or if they're a surgical candidate?
It will tell me if it's a bladder issue, if it's a urethral issue, if it's a nerve-related issue, if the bladder is working well. And then there are different ways that we treat, from simple to more complicated or more involved, depending on the diagnosis.
So how many patients will actually need surgery per se, as opposed to more of a medical management?
So it depends again. If the main problem is stress urinary incontinence, there's not a lot of medications available to treat that condition. There are actually none that are approved in the United States. There's one that has been approved in Europe that we can use off-label in the United States, but it's not very effective. So we're really looking at physical therapy and conservative treatment or surgery. If the patient has overactive bladder, there are more medications that are available that we have in our repertoire that we can use, as well as physical therapy or pelvic floor exercises. And if they fail that, then we're looking at neuromodulation, things like Botox, actually like bladder pacemakers. And if patients fail that, then really we're looking at surgery that is more involved. So it's rare for a patient with overactive bladder to make it all the way to surgery. We usually can do things that are simpler, but while with stress incontinence is more common.
And that's where the famous bladder sling
comes along. So that is a treatment for stress urinary incontinence. It's really a sling that goes under the urethra, not per se the bladder. And what it does is that it provides kind of a backbone to the urethra so that if there are any increases in abdominal pressure, like that coughing or lifting, that the urethra, when it moves, has something in the back that helps it close up so that there's no leakage of urine. It's really like a hammock.
So before patients get to that stage, you did mention physiotherapy of the bladder. Is that the so-called Kegel exercises that were so famous 30 years ago?
It is kind of a fancy Kegel exercise.
Okay.
So Kegel exercises can be very effective, but they're very difficult to do. And I think most patients don't realize how difficult they are to do. And they're very difficult to teach. So when we talk about physical therapies, really working with an expert who is a physical therapist that specializes in the pelvic floor, that can help not only assess that pelvic floor and come up with an exercise regimen, but teach the patients how to isolate them, those muscles, and how to exercise them.
And you actually have to have fairly good muscle function to start and to be able to feel the muscles, right?
You have to at least be able to isolate them.
Okay.
Meaning that, so you can have weak muscles, but you have to be able to know where they are and isolate them so you can exercise them. You can, they can become stronger. That's the aim of the therapy. But if you cannot isolate them and you don't know where they are at all, it's something that is very difficult to do or impossible in some patients.
Yes, we're probably all sitting here trying to do it right now as we're talking.
You know, and I tell my patients, you know, you're supposed to do them without contracting the rectum, without squeezing the abdomen. I mean, it's more complicated, I think, than we have led patients to believe.
Yes,
I think a lot of us think we're doing Kegels and we're not quite doing them right.
And I just want to reiterate for the listeners, too, that's just not walking into any physical therapy studio mm-hmm. and saying, does anyone know how to do pelvic floor? And there are yes. dedicated physical therapists who have done extra schooling, extra training to work on that muscle group. And just like you would want to go to a specialized physical therapist, if it were your shoulder or your hip, you really want to search out somebody who specifically only works in that realm versus someone who says, yes, I can do that, too. Correct?
That is absolutely correct, and especially with physical therapy, because I tell my patients it depends on the patient motivation, because it's one of those therapies you have to do for life. There have been studies that show that even if you get improvement, if you stop doing these exercises, within 3 months you revert to where you started. So you have to commit yourself to do them forever. If you're not, then probably it's not a good therapy for you. And it depends on the therapist. If the therapist doesn't know what they're doing, they're not going to be effective.
So absolutely,
you should be a specialist.
So if they can't commit to that longevity, because it's like training any other muscle, then they need to sit down and talk with a qualified surgeon about the bladder sling.
Right. They need to think about, yes, exactly.
And what I want to ask you is, why the bad rap? You're our specialist. So why the bad rap on bladder slings?
So the bladder sling per se is not about procedure. It's actually a very effective procedure, and we have a lot of data to support its efficacy. The issue has really been on using mesh as a sling material, polypropylene mesh, and if that is something that patients should have done and if there are complications that are unique to the use of the material itself.
Okay, that's interesting. So that's what they've been advertising, the mesh sling is
correct.
The problem. Okay.
So we can do slings that are very similar, that we can use the cadaveric tissue, we can use, which is not very effective, but we can use the patient's own tissue, which is very effective, and doesn't have those complications that you see in those commercials. The commercials are really more regarding the mesh material used for slings.
Is it necessary to do a hysterectomy in order to use the patient's tissue as support?
Okay. No.
You can do this without actually removing the uterus?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can do corner suspension when you use sutures, but you can use the patient's fascia, which is the lining of the abdomen. So we do an incision similar to a C-section incision and harvest piece of fascia and close that incision and use the fascia as the sling itself.
So one more question before we go into the break. Do these surgical repair options last? Is it one a lifetime, or are they likely to have to be revised?
That's a tricky question I don't know the answer to. The longest follow-up that we have is probably in some of these mesh slings, and it's about 14, 15 years. We don't have studies where patients have been followed much longer than that. And there's a belief that as we age, tissues change and things would change. So I don't think it will be realistic to believe that these things will last forever.
So you're listening to Dr. Talk on Money Radio 1510 AM and 99.3 FM. And we're talking with Dr. Larissa Rodriguez from the Keck School of Medicine at USC. And we will be right back after the break. You can join us on drtalkblog.com or Facebook.com/DrTalk, #DrTalk.
Can't you see I'm burning, burning?
When you're driving down the road, the last thing you want to think about is tires. Trust Discount Tire to get you up to speed with the right tire for your vehicle. We carry the world's best brands of tires, all at everyday low prices. At Discount Tire, we're not just about tires, we're about people. We'll get you the right tire for your vehicle to help keep you safe on the road. Stop by any Discount Tire store for a free air pressure and tire safety check. Your low price journey starts here. Discount Tire.
Join board-certified and personal physician Dr. Carrie Bordinko every Saturday afternoon at 1 p.m. on Money Radio 1510 a.m. and 99.3 FM for Doctor Talk, where we put healthcare back in your hands. Each week, we'll have a full panel of nationally known medical experts as guest speakers, taking an in-depth look at the issues that affect us all and matter most. Tune in this Saturday at 1 p.m. for Doctor Talk.
Your healthcare, your well-being, and your life. Now back to Doctor Talk with Dr. Barclay White, a board-certified radiologist, and Dr. Bordinko, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. To join the conversation, visit our Facebook page at facebook.com/Dr. Talk and use the hashtag Dr. Talk. That's facebook.com/Dr. Talk. Now, here's your hosts, Dr. Bordinko and Dr. Barclay White.
So welcome back. We are here with Dr. Larissa Rodriguez from the USC Keck School of Medicine, and we're talking about urinary incontinence or bladder leakage. Larissa, I know that you are actually doing some research on stress incontinence. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I have been NIH, NIH funded and been doing research on stress urinary incontinence for a number of years. My focus has been on trying to figure out ways where we can improve the function of the urethra, where we're not putting slings or materials to correct leakage, but that we can actually improve the function. And I've been working with the use of adipose-derived stem cells, which are stem cells that come from fat tissue, and using those cells to build the smooth muscle of the urethra and the wall of the urethra to improve incontinence.
Wow,
I've also done some research that is more clinical to try to figure out about these complications of slings and if it's really these mesh materials or it's really the way the slings are placed or these are technical issues or there's issues intrinsic to the material, looking at infections of these materials to try to understand why some women have difficulties with this mesh slings, which can be very, very effective, and while other women don't have any issues with them at all.
So that actually brings up an interesting point, because the way it is talked about on the television by the lawyers is that everyone has a problem if they've got a stress, if they have a mesh sling, but that actually isn't true. What percentage of women do have problems?
You know, we don't know what percentage of women have problems. Probably about 15 to 20% of women will have issues, and they can be simple issues as having a urinary tract infection after surgery, the more complicated issues, probably the most difficult to treat, is patients who may develop pain with intercourse or chronic pelvic pain that can increase as years go by from the time of the sling being placed. And for us to try to understand if the sling is the cause of that pain and if the pain will resolve if the sling is removed.
And I know that's another area of big research for you as well, is women with chronic pelvic pain. And we could, you know, probably do a whole nother show on that topic.
Definitely. There aren't too many experts on that, actually.
No.
Yes.
So we're going to go into our next section here, which is what we call the myth versus fact section. And it's the way we like to wrap up our show and kind of get the word out there, clean up some of the information that's on the internet about what is real and what is not real. So we've got our expert on pelvic issues, female urology issues, and we're going to ask you some questions. So, Larissa, I'm going to lead off with, only elderly people experience urinary incontinence. Myth or fact?
Myth, absolutely not. It can happen in young women. It definitely increases, the incidence increases with age, but it can happen at any age group.
So So for the various reasons that we discussed earlier in the program, yes. So correct. If you have incontinence, you should, this is a myth, you should drink as little as possible if you have a weak bladder.
Well, there's some studies that show that the rate of urine production, how fast you make urine, can trigger some of the spasms we were talking about with this overactive bladder syndrome. So that it is recommended that patients drink, limit their drinking to 32 to 40 ounces of fluid a day. So it's not as little as possible, but definitely if you drink gallons and gallons of water, you will have more urgency and more urge incontinence episodes. Now, anything that makes you produce a lot of urine will trigger those contractions. So anything that we call a diuretic or like a water pill, caffeine, alcohol, will trigger those contractions. So usually staying off those things help as well.
Okay, so not everything ends up being a medication or surgery. Sometimes dietary changes can actually help us.
Behavioral changes as well.
Yes.
All right. One of our other myths is it's normal to leak a little urine. I know you hate this question.
Well, I think that's a myth. I think it's not normal to leak any urine. Urinary incontinence is defined as the involuntary loss of urine that is embarrassing to the patient and affects their quality of life. So if anything does that, it should not happen.
So the next myth we have, bladder trouble is inevitable with aging or childbirth.
No, I think there's a difference in, between more common and inevitable. It is definitely more common. These are risk factors for having bladder issues, but it's not normal to have bladder issues, and it's not a normal part of aging or a normal part of childbirth.
So are there certain things that people do, like, you know, jogging and things like that, that can predispose you to develop this? Is it more common, for instance, in joggers?
We don't know that. There's actually a big study being conducted in the U.S. looking at exercise as either a protective factor or a risk of stress incontinence. But we don't know if long-distance runners have an increased risk of urinary incontinence.
This is a really interesting myth that I found on the web, and I really want you to speak to it, which is sounds or thoughts can trigger incontinence. And I think that is just a fascinating concept. So tell us what you know about that.
Well, there's definitely triggers of spasms in the bladder, of the overactive bladder type of syndrome, urgency. And I think a lot of your listeners would have experienced that when they get home and they get out of the car and they get that keys out of the pocket, that's when they get the urgency. Or when they're doing dishes and they run water, that's when they get the urgency. So there's definitely triggers that are behavioral triggers for these spasms, and we can learn how to suppress them.
That's really fascinating. Carrie and I are both nodding at one another here knowingly.
Okay, so I got to ask, how do we suppress them? What's the treatment plan if there's a trigger that you're trying to modify?
You know, the best thing to do, which sounds counterintuitive, is not to respond to the urge, to make a phone call to this to a magazine, and that urge will pass. But every time we respond to the urge, it's almost like we are giving positive reinforcement to this behavior. So that urge will get stronger and stronger every time we do the activity.
Wow, so just like the old-fashioned not acknowledging bad behavior in a toddler.
Right, it's a little Pavlovian, right?
It is. And then one of the other ones, I know you're a female specialist, but we have to include our men here just a little because we do have male listeners to the show. So a very common misconception, and I don't want to leave them out, is prostate surgery leaves most men incontinent. And can you speak to that just briefly?
I'm not I see a lot of women because these conditions are very common in women, but actually I see men as well. I am avoiding dysfunction, pelvic medicine expert, so I see both men and women. Prostate cancer surgery can lead to stress urinary incontinence. It's one of the few reasons men might develop stress urinary incontinence. But it's actually not very common, and it definitely depends on the skill of the surgeon who did the surgery, on the technique that is used, on the age of the patient, and other risk factors. And as these surgeries have evolved, the risk of stress incontinence in men after a radical prostatectomy has really gotten smaller. It has decreased.
And overall, in a man that hasn't been surgerized for any reason and doesn't have prostate problems, is it rarely a problem in men?
Stress incontinence is. Overactive bladder is not. Okay. Overactive bladder, men catch up with women. Women get it a little younger in age, but as men get older, they will catch up. And they will also experience urge incontinence and overactive bladder.
And so for them, the treatment is also similar in that you would do the necessary testing.
Except you really have to ensure they're not obstructed by the prostate and they're not in retention.
And this is not on our myth versus fact sheet, but you touched on it earlier, and since we're talking about men and overactive bladder, the use of Botox is now becoming more common in the treatment of overactive bladder. Is that correct?
That is correct. It's just been it's been FDA approved for the treatment of overactive bladder, and that's why you see there's more awareness of its use.
So where do you inject for that? Which part of the anatomy do you inject?
In the bladder wall itself. So using a cystoscope and visual guidance, you put a small needle and you make the injections in the wall of the bladder.
In the lower part of the bladder?
In the wall.
In the
all
wall.
All throughout the bladder.
Oh, interesting.
Okay, so one more question for you, Dr. Rodriguez. Myth versus fact, and the question is, surgery should be your last resort in female incontinence issues.
Well, I think it depends on the patient. You know, the treatment of incontinence is very individualized. It's probably more individualized than other medical conditions because it depends on how active the patient is, what type of lifestyle they have, how the condition is affecting their quality of life, and what are the aims. Their aims are to be completely dry versus the aim is to improve or be able to sit through a movie without having to go to the bathroom will really affect the choice of treatment. In terms of stress incontinence, we know that surgery is more effective. There's more likelihood of cure, of being dry. There are more risks. And there are things as physical therapy that have no risks and can improve your condition, but might not be as curative as surgery.
I have one more quick question. HRT, does that decrease the symptoms of this stress incontinence?
So there's some evidence that vaginal hormones to treat the genitourinary system can improve symptoms of urgency and prevent infections and overall be good for sexual intercourse and sexual well-being of women. Now, the use of systemic estrogen has not proven or has not shown to be as beneficial to urinary incontinence. Actually, there are some studies that show that it's detrimental, that women who are on XRT replacement orally can have worse urgency as well as stress urinary incontinence.
Okay, we're going to wrap it up. We ran it to the last second with you, Dr. Rodriguez. Thank you so much for taking the time to be on the show and helping our listeners understand female pelvic issues, especially stress and urge incontinence. We hope you will join us again next week for another Saturday show of Dr. Talk. We'll be here on Money Radio 1510 AM, 99.3 FM. And as always, we would really like you to send us your thoughts, feedback, and like us on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/Dr. Talk or check our blog out at drtalkblog.com. Have a great weekend.
You've been listening to Dr. Talk with Dr. Barclay White, a board-certified radiologist, and Dr. Bordico, a board-certified doctor of internal medicine and personal physician. If you missed any part of this show, please go to moneyradio.com and listen to the audio archive. For additional information or to have your questions answered live on the air, send an email to drtalkaz@gmail.com. Be sure to tune in to Dr. Talk this and every Saturday afternoon from 1 to 2 p.m. right here on Money Radio 1510 and 99.3 FM. The information and opinions expressed in this broadcast are intended to address specific questions asked or situations described on this program and are not designed to constitute advice or recommendations as to any disease, ailment, or physical condition. You should not act or rely upon any information contained in this broadcast without seeking the advice of your personal physician. If you have any questions about the information or opinions expressed during this broadcast, please contact your doctor.
You found the one place on your radio that talks money, how to make it, spend it, and save it every day. Thanks for being with us.
Money is what we talk about. We're Money Radio 1510, KFNN Mesa Phoenix, and 99.3 FM K257 CD.